This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone. I'm Talia.
And I'm Tanya.
And together we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Talia.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope that the past week has been amazing. You know, Tanya, that I like to do obscure stories.
Yes.
The story I have has never been done before. And as a matter of fact, the only information I could find on this story was from court records. So it's extremely obscure. And I want to let everybody know right now, it's got a lot of sexual violence. It made me really upset doing it. That being said, are you ready to hear it?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Before I start, I want to ask everybody to take 1 second just to hit that subscribe / follow button on whatever awesome app you're listening to. And with that, I'm going to start this.
Okay.
It's 6:30 a.m. on August 1st in the year 1991. There's this irrigation worker, and he came upon the body of a young woman on the south bank of the Houghton Canal. The Houghton Canal is in Fresno, California.
Why do I always think of raisins when I think of Fresno? Is that where the raisins are from?
Yeah.
Okay.
They have vineyards everywhere.
Okay.
It's funny, you think of raisins, I think of wine.
Do you?
The Houghton Canal is one of many canals that provides water to the local farmers in Fresno. In the area where the body was found, on the south side of the canal, that watered vineyards, and on the north side, it watered almond fields or almond trees. This body was found laying in the dirt. It was a female on her back with her arms bent near her head, and her legs were extended outward. Blood covered her face and her chest. The victim's blouse was pulled down by her waist, and her bra was pulled up, leaving her breasts exposed. On her feet were her socks and her shoes, but she didn't have any pants, and she didn't have any underwear. A few feet away, and this is more near the water, an officer found her discarded pink panties laying on the edge. 2 bullets pierced her head. She'd been shot execution style. One was a small contact wound on her right temple, made by a 25 caliber copper jacketed bullet. I don't know much about bullets. The other was this really large contact wound made by a bullet that entered her forehead and ended up exiting the back of her skull. Based on the crime scene evidence, including blood spatter and the position of the body, authorities concluded that she was killed where she was found. Most likely she was shot in the temple first, and then the final shot was to the forehead. There are obvious signs of a brutal rape or rapes. There were abrasions and lacerations that were clearly visible on her genitals. And on her inner thighs, there were just bruises everywhere, which the medical examiner opined that they were inflicted just prior to her death. Based on the condition of her pelvic region, the coroner determined that she'd been either raped with an object or by multiple men. In addition, she was severely beaten. I mean, she was beaten bad. Bruises speckled her entire body, but they were mostly concentrated on her forearms, her face, and her legs. There was bruising on her neck that indicated some type of ligature had been used to choke her, but not to death. And it seemed that she had been choked multiple times and then released and then choked and then released. The victim had a substantial level of pencillidine. I don't know how you say it, but you know it as PCP.
Okay.
In her system. Her alcohol level was a 0.07, and she also had cocaine in her. This young woman was later identified as 18-year-old Dorothy Medina, a senior at the McLean High School in Fresno.
Wow.
She was young.
She was really young.
And she had a horrific last few hours of her life. The embankment of the canal where Dorothy's body was found, that bordered rows and rows of grapevines. Found only 10 feet away from Dorothy Between two rows of these grapevines lay a second dead female body.
Oh, man.
This body was identified as Arlene Sanchez. She was a friend of Dorothy's from Fresno. Unlike Dorothy, Arlene was fully clothed. Her body didn't have any of the same signs of a violent rape or a brutal beating. She did have some bruises on her, but nothing like what Dorothy went through. Arlene, too, had been shot in the head twice. One was a contact wound made by a 9mm bullet that entered her forehead and ended up lodging in the base of her neck. The other was a smaller wound made by a 25 caliber bullet that entered her left temple. There was a large amount of blood on Arlene's body, indicating that her heart was still functioning when both wounds were inflicted on her. So the first bullet didn't kill her. Based on the footprints and the position of her body, investigators believe that she was killed while fleeing up the embankment. There were two types of shoe prints found near her body, and they were both from different men's shoes. So it seemed very likely that two men chased after Arlene as she ran for her life. Now, toxicology reports show that she had 0.14% blood alcohol and substantial levels of PCP and cocaine in her body.
Oh, damn.
She was most likely loaded, but not to the point where she didn't appreciate what was going on and the circumstances she was in. Around the same time that this irrigation worker spotted Dorothy's body, a ranch farmer noticed something odd. He was working at what was once known as the Quist Dairy Farm, located just south of where the bodies were found, when two cars drove past him. One was his fairly new Pontiac Bonneville, which was wet, so it was dripping with water like it had just been washed, and its windows were down and there were some men in it. The other was a light blue Datsun. Only a few minutes after they passed by, he spotted the Pontiac again. It was engulfed in flames at the canal embankment, a little bit away from where the bodies were found. It was clear when authorities were putting out the fire that it had been intentionally set and most likely was related to the murders, someone trying to destroy the evidence through a fire. But they were still able to find 9mm shell casings, and they even found one bullet that hadn't been expended. A female detective named Melinda Barra, she was assigned as the lead detective for the murders of Dorothy and Arlene. Early on in the investigation, she learned there was a concurrent investigation at the same time regarding the brutal gang rape of a 15-year-old girl named Spring. On the same night that Arlene and Dorothy were murdered, Spring, who's just a high schooler, I believe she was in 10th grade, was sexually assaulted by at least 8 men.
Oh, man.
A minimum of 12 times.
What?
Isn't that just awful?
That poor kid.
These men were part of a gang known as the Parkside Fresno Bulldogs. Do you know about the Parkside Fresno Bulldogs?
I do not.
Well, wait till I tell you about them. They are a criminal and prison gang.
Oh.
At their peak, there was 12,000 members that lived in Fresno alone.
12,000?
12,000. I don't even know how many people live in Fresno.
I know. It sounds like a lot.
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
This is so ridiculous. I'm embarrassed to say this. They would bark to one another.
No, they wouldn't.
As a sign for bulldog calling.
Okay.
So embarrassed to even say that. And they would address each other as dog, perro, or efe. This gang adopted the Fresno State University apparel as their de facto uniforms.
I bet you Fresno State University was really excited about that.
Well, they had a tenfold increase in royalties to the university from this licensed merchandise for 10 years from 1990 to 2000.
Damn.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
I have no respect for anybody that barks at somebody else.
No, it's stupid.
As a calling. So ridiculous. Here's Spring's story of what happened to her on the night of July 31st and in the early morning hours of August 1st. She'd been invited to a party on some rural property off of North Hayes Road in rural Fresno. The property consisted of three trailers. Richard Avila, he was a Fresno Bulldog gang member, and his wife, Tracina, They lived in one of the trailers there. It wasn't even actually a real trailer like you would think of, like a mobile home. It was called a Wilderness RV.
Oh, so it's an RV.
It's an RV. And Wilderness is the company that made it. I don't know much about RVs. I didn't realize that Wilderness is a company that makes RVs, but now I do. Their RV was next door to an abandoned mobile home. On the other side of the abandoned mobile home was a trailer where Tresina's mom lived, along with her younger sister and her 15-year-old brother, Zeke. All three of these trailers are now going to be considered the Wilderness compound.
So one of them is vacant.
One is vacant, exactly.
Okay.
One's an RV and one's a mobile home.
Got it.
All three get some trees, and they're out in the country off a country road in which there's just tons of fields, crops growing. That night, about 30 people, mostly the Parkside Fresno Bulldogs gang members, they gathered on that North Hayes property in the expectation of a drive-by shooting. They expected a rival gang to retaliate for some bullshit I'm not even going to go into because that's not the point of the story. To prepare for this drive-by, they got a lot of beer, a lot of guns, a lot of weed, and a lot of PCP. It was like a drive-by shooting party. That's what I've determined it to be.
Okay.
Literally a drive-by shooting party. Like Everybody's getting together, they're partying, and they're waiting for shots to be fired. Earlier that evening, Spring got a call from her friend, Zeke. Now, Zeke is the 15-year-old that lives with his mom in what I'm going to call the main trailer. That night, Zeke's mom, his sister Tresina, and his other sister, they decided to stay in a hotel. They didn't want to be a part of any drive-by, which is smart.
Right.
It's very smart. But Zeke stayed behind, and he asked Spring if she wanted to come over and hang out.
Oh, boy.
I don't think he probably mentioned on the phone, hey, there might be a drive-by, but he could have. I don't know. He offered to pick her and her friend Kim up and bring them to the trailer to party. Spring was friends with Zeke, and she enjoyed hanging out with him. They knew each other from school, and it sounded like a good time, so she agreed. A few hours later, Zeke, and he had some other friends, they were like 15, 16, they showed up in a stolen purple Impala. A 6'4 Impala.
Nice.
Nice. They then picked up Kim at her house, and they drove down the dark country roads to the Wilderness compound. They got there at about 10:30. Spring and Kim were immediately the focus of the other gang members' attention. And there weren't any other girls there. It's just a group of men, guns, drugs, and alcohol. And now two 15-year-old girls.
Oh, fuck.
It's so bad. First, they were a little bit thrown off when they saw all the guns. But once they were handed booze, they just started drinking it. And they're like,
fuck it.
Fuck it. Exactly. Eventually, the two teen girls went into the main trailer with the teen boys. And they played some video games for a while. Then they heard the trailer door swing open. 26-year-old Richard Avila, he entered Zeke's room. And he asked if any of the kids were interested in smoking some KJ, which is known as PCP.
I had no idea.
I didn't either. And I've had my fair share of partying. Spring was already buzzed from smoking weed and drinking alcohol. So she was like, hell yeah, I'll have some PCP or KJ. After she did that, the men continued to ply her with more weed, more beer, more PCP, and even cocaine. Twice, Spring and Kim left with a group of guys to go get booze at the liquor store. On their way home from the second supply run, a blazer approached them from behind and started flashing its lights. And some of the guys in the car just opened the window and started firing 25 calibers into the air.
Fuck.
I know, that's way too much for me.
Yes.
I like to have fun. I made stupid mistakes as a teen, but I do believe gunfire, I would have been out. But I'm not judging her. After returning to the Wilderness compound, Spring was invited into the Wilderness RV. That's the RV with some of the gang members.
Oh, shit.
That's when the sophomore's life changed forever. Once inside the small trailer, some of the men began making crude sexual innuendos towards her. And there's a lot of men in this story. So some of them I'm just not even going to bother to say their name because it's just going to get too complicated. But there are a few that I'm going to point out to you. One man in particular, his name was Michael Rojas. He went by Blanco. He became very aggressive. And this 25-year-old had a history of violence. 3 years earlier, he robbed a convenience store. And as he was fleeing, he fired shots at two young girls in the neighborhood because he didn't want them to identify him. He got away with that crime. 9 years earlier, in 1982, there was another incident in which he went a little batshit nuts, crazy violent. There was this teen boy. His name was Ronald. Ronald would just walk at home, minding his own business. And there were a group of teens fighting. They were actually two different gang members fighting. Blanco approached Ronald and asked him, "What's going on?" And before Ronald could even reply that he had no idea, he's just walking in the neighborhood, Blanco randomly pulled out a knife from his pocket and stabbed him once in the neck and twice in the back. Ronald survived, and Blanco did a few years in the juvie. That was it. So now he is the one trying to kiss Spring. But she believes she can push him away. She can just say no. Yeah, just say no. She doesn't realize how much danger she is in. So she resists his advances. But he's all fueled up on PCP and alcohol. And he throws Spring down on the mattress. She tried to get up, but he just laughed at her. And he pushed her back down. He yelled for another gang member to hold her down so he could fuck her. With the help of his friend, who pinned her arms down, Blanco removed his belt from his pants. And he secured it around her neck. He then took out a .25 caliber and he put it to her head. And he said, quote, "Shut up or I'll kill you." Spring had never been so afraid in her life. This would just be the beginning of almost 3 hours of hell this child would have to endure at the hands of a group of men who did things to her they would probably never, ever have done if they were alone. But they encouraged each other. A few men began gathering around her, lifting her dress up. They pulled her underwear down. Blanco was the first one to rape her. When he was finished, he picked up his gun again and he held it to her temple and he cocked back the hammer. He kept it like that while another gang member named Ray Juarez raped her. With a gun still to her head, Blanco grabbed her neck and he told her, quote, "You're going to suck my homeboy's dick." So while she's being raped by one man, she's being forced to perform oral sex on another. The assault was so brutal, it ripped her necklace off her neck, her earrings were ripped out of her ears, and more men came. Frank, Michael, Cordova, Johnny, Jeffrey, David, and others joined in. They each took turns with this battered girl. Blanco held her legs open while she was raped at least 12 times by these gang members. She couldn't even remember how many men had raped her. She knows there was 8, but she passed in and out of consciousness because of the belt, so she couldn't be sure exactly how many men and how many times she was sexually assaulted. Her hair was pulled out. She was repeatedly punched. She was choked. All the while, her friend Kim was playing video games. She had no idea.
Was she in the other trailer?
She was in the main trailer.
Wow.
And for whatever reason, the man never touched her, which is really weird.
It is really weird.
It was about 3 a.m. when a gang member named Deonda, he opened the door to the Wilderness RV, and he was shocked to see Spring laying there. She was crying. Her dress was bunched up around her waist. And there was that gun to her head. Deonda began arguing with Blanco, saying, "Let her go." At first, he resisted, but then in the end, I guess he was done with her anyway because it had been hours, so he was like, "Okay, whatever." Deonda ended up helping Spring find her shoes, find her panties, and he guided her to the passenger seat of his car. He said he would personally see that she got home safely. Just as they were leaving, Ray Juarez, and he was one of the men that raped Spring, he jumped into the car with them, sandwiching Spring between Deonda and himself. He had a gun in his hand, but then they all had guns, like, all the time. While he was sitting there, he turned to Spring And he asked her if he could call her the next day.
Are you fucking kidding me?
What the hell?
Are you kidding me?
What the fuck is that about?
Yeah, sure. Hand me your number. The fuck?
Obviously some sort of delusion. Spring, I think at this point, didn't care what happened to her because she told him no, no, no.
She said
she didn't even play along
with
it.
Yeah, really.
As the car pulled out of the property, Spring noticed a thin girl being escorted by some men into the wilderness RV. And there was another girl entering the main trailer. Her heart dropped. She hadn't seen them there before. She just knew what was going to happen to that girl in that wilderness RV. Kim, Spring's friend, ended up getting a ride home from a guy named Richard on his motorcycle. And Richard lives in the wilderness RV. On his way back to the compound, he stopped at that hotel room where I told you his wife was staying. Mm-hmm. She was sleeping, and she told him that she would be returning as soon as his son came up. So that would have to be when the party ended.
Yeah, y'all need to clean up and get the hell out.
Spring and Kim survived the night, but the other two women on that compound wouldn't be so lucky. Before I tell you about Dorothy Medina's last few hours, we're going to take a quick break. It was around midnight when Blanco and 33-year-old Johnny Avila, now Johnny is Richard's cousin, they announced that they were going to be leaving to pick up some more homegirls to party. The men drove the 64 Chevy Impala to the home of Dorothy Medina's. Dorothy was familiar with the Parkside Fresno Bulldogs, and she was Hispanic, and the Bulldogs were Hispanic. And I think given the fact there were 12,000 in Fresno, it would be really hard not to be familiar with them. And most likely, almost anybody would know somebody, at least if you're in that Hispanic community. Dorothy had only recently broke up with Ray Juarez, one of the many men that raped Spring. And at the time Dorothy was being picked up, that was the same time that Spring was being raped. John and Blanco pulled up on the street in front of Dorothy's house. From there, they went to the home of Arlene Sanchez, Dorothy's friend. I don't know anything about Arlene. Only information I could find, as I told you in the beginning of the story, was court records and one article that didn't discuss the crime, but one of the perpetrators. I do believe that she was probably about 19 years old, 18 or 19. And I know that she lived with her sister, Karina, who was 20. Dorothy got out of the Impala. She walked up to the front door and she knocked. Karina answered, and she spoke to Dorothy briefly. Dorothy told her they were going to be going to that wilderness compound to party. Arlene grabbed her purse. She told Karina that she loved her and that she'd be home later. And then she hopped into the passenger side of the Impala. That was the last time Karina ever saw her little sister alive. When Arlene and Dorothy arrived at the party, as I said, Spring was still being gang raped in the wilderness trailer. Most of the 30 men were standing outside around a bonfire, drinking, smoking. And of course, they see these two females, and all you have to do is be at a bar at 1 a.m. to know how men are when they, so especially only two females left at the bar. These two girls got all their attention. They got offered booze, weed, coke, and PCP, which the girls readily accepted. After about 45 minutes, the girls were so loaded from the drugs that they were leaning against one of the cars, basically to stabilize themselves so they didn't fall down. Ray Juarez approached Dorothy, and the two had a bitter breakup only a few weeks earlier. He warned Dorothy not to smoke too much PCP because she didn't want to lose control at this place. But she snapped back at him, telling him, leave me alone.
Yeah, mind your own business.
Don't tell me what to do.
Exactly. Fuck off.
That's probably exactly what she said. That's what I would have said. Mm-hmm. Then I would have said, give me some more. Where is it? I'm going to do it right now.
Exactly. Fuck you, Ray. Tell me what to do.
Right? I'm a bitch. Clearly, we were projecting a little bit of ourselves onto Dorothy. Within minutes of this encounter, a group of men half carried a stumbling Dorothy into the wilderness trailer. Spring had been used up, and she wasn't needed anymore. So they were on to their next victim. Dorothy's clothes were forced off her at gunpoint, and she was pushed onto the same mattress. A man named Frank Rodriguez, he raped her. Blanco laid next to her with his face by her face, and he was holding onto the belt that was tightly wrapped around her neck. With the other hand, he had a .357 pointed at her head. I can't imagine how terrifying that would be. By this time, most of the drive-by partiers were completely annihilated. They'd been drinking for like 6 hours,
yeah.
Some even 8. And a line ended up forming outside the trailer's front door.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Each was waiting their turn for a piece of Dorothy. And that line was there for almost 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
Dorothy was hysterical. Each time she cried, Blanca would tighten the belt around her neck and tell her to shut the fuck up. During one of the rapes, Ray Warris walked into the trailer. Dorothy turned to him and hoped to find just a splinter of humanity in her ex-boyfriend. She grabbed at him and begged him to save her. You know what he told her? He told her to just relax and, quote, kick back.
Oh, man.
Then he ordered her to give him a blowjob.
Oh, I knew it. I knew he was going to do something like that.
Yeah, he's the same one that wanted Spring's phone number.
Yeah, exactly. Nasty ass.
Johnny, Jeffrey, Cordova, Richard, Michael, David, each of them got a turn with Dorothy. And again, there's so many more. One of the party goers standing outside the trailer heard her cry out, quote, stop, please someone call the police. I'm being raped, help. But of course, he didn't do anything except open the wilderness trailer door and peek inside. What he saw was Dorothy on the bed. Blanco was holding her ankles apart. And this is really strange. Ray Juarez was sitting on top of her, pinning her arms down with his hands and knees, while another man was raping her.
So he's sitting on her chest, maybe?
Yeah, and then someone's holding her feet.
Maybe he was sitting on her chest and like holding her down like his face is in her face.
Or something. I don't know. I don't want to think about it too hard, but it seems like a lot of bodies. A lot of bodies in a very small space. Blanco left the wilderness trailer briefly, and he headed over to the main trailer where the teen boys, Zeke, and his best friend, Robert, were playing video games. And I'm not sure what Arlene is doing during all this, but I know two things. She is not being abused, and she doesn't know what's going on. Blanco encouraged Robert to follow him to the wilderness trailer, telling him he had something there he wanted to show him. When he opened the door, Robert, who was wasted himself from booze and drugs, was just stunned by what he saw. A naked Dorothy was surrounded by men, and she appeared to be drifting in and out of consciousness. The belt was secured around her neck, and it was just secured enough to cause her to not completely pass out. He noticed she was moaning, and at first he thought she was moaning in pleasure, but then realized she was not moaning in pleasure. He estimates there were at least 8 men at that one time with all of their pants down, each touching and grabbing her limp body and forcing themselves on her in various ways. Blanco ordered those men to step away from Dorothy, saying, quote, let the little guy get his, end quote. Now, this is according to Robert, okay? So let's just take this with a grain of salt because this is a very self-serving statement. Blanco pulled Robert's pants down and pushed him on top of Dorothy while the group of men encouraged him to rape her. Robert says he couldn't get an erection because he knew it was wrong.
Okay.
And he defiantly pulled his pants back up. Everyone began making fun of him, and he felt so foolish that he scurried outside and he took off for home. However, further in the same court records, it says that he is one of them that raped her. So I don't know what the full truth is. As the night faded and morning approached, the party started winding down. I mean, you can only get shit-faced for so long. And I know, I know this. Most of the Parkside Fresno Bulldog gang had already had their share of Dorothy. And she was really nothing more than a broken rag doll. But there were a few sadistic men that wanted more. They didn't care that she was bleeding from everywhere. Her genitals were swollen, cut, bloody, and just, you already know, just, right. You can imagine. She was bruised. Her face was swollen. These two men, they went inside the wilderness trailer and they emerged a minute later with Dorothy. They covered her head and her body with an old blanket. One man held her around the upper half of her body while the other man held her by her feet. Together, and I don't know why, but they carried her to the abandoned trailer. I don't know the logistics for why they did it. But you could hear the muffled pleas of Dorothy from under the blanket as she was being carried to a different trailer. Blanco ran up to her and screamed, "Shut up, bitch." But Dorothy still had some fight in her. She was brought into that abandoned trailer, and the gang members that were standing outside by the bonfire, they heard the sounds of glass breaking and thumping noises from inside it. Dorothy was desperate to escape, so much so that she punched a window with her hand, but she wasn't able to match. I mean, she wasn't able to match these men.
I know, there's 30 of them.
One man held her down while the other raped her, all the while he was punching her in the face at the same time. Then the men switched places. While Dorothy was in that abandoned trailer still, Arlene was dragged from the main trailer, where she spent most of the night oblivious to her friend's gang rape. Blanco began screaming obscenities at her, and he punched her so hard that she fell to the ground. She just lay there, crying. I mean, she'd just been having fun.
Right.
And all of a sudden, this shit's happening.
She didn't know what was going on.
Then Dorothy emerged from the trailer. She saw Arlene and she ran towards her, and she was holding this blanket to cover her mostly naked body. Blanco grabbed Dorothy and he pushed her face down on a chair that was under a tree. He placed a belt around her neck and he put a gun to her head and he said, "Do you know who we are?" She cried out, no, I don't. He said, "You know, you're a lying bitch." He turned to that group of gangsters that was remaining and he said, "We can't let these girls go home. They know too much. We got to take them out. If we let them go, they're going to tell on us for what we did to them. And then the police are going to come and raid the compound." That's a quote. Almost everyone agreed. Yeah, let's take them out. But not all. Michael Rodriguez, now he had raped Spring and raped Dorothy. Apparently he's a rapist, but he doesn't want to be a murderer because he said, quote, "This is crazy. These are your home girls. You can't do this to your home girls." End
where,
quote.
Where was he 6 hours ago?
He was raping somebody,
yes,
I think.
It's okay to rape your home girls.
See, they have it in their mind. They're just partying with these girls, yeah. Like some of them. I mean, some of them know what they were doing. Others, yeah. I don't know. I'm not justifying it. In their own twisted, egocentric minds, think these girls want it. I don't know. Richard Avila. He said, "I don't care what you do with these girls. Just get them off my property before my wife and mother-in-law come home.
His wife was coming home.
Because the sun was rising and he knew as soon as that sun came up, he's going to be in big shit. Yeah. So funny. Like, I know. To have these tough gang members be afraid of their mother-in-law and wife. Ray Juarez. Now, remember Ray Juarez? Because we hate that son of a bitch.
Yes, we do.
He must have had one brief moment of clarity, one brief second where he felt his soul, because he implored the men to just let him take Dorothy and Arlene home. But it was a man named Johnny Avila that made the final decision. He's the one that decided the fate of the two girls. He told his cousin Richard, quote, "We got to get rid of these bitches. I'm going to handle this business." Let me tell you a little bit about Johnny. Because this is a sad story and it really pisses me off. Johnny's dad is rolling over in his grave right now about his son. Johnny was the second of 8 children. He's the oldest boy. His mom was a homemaker and his dad, his name was John Sr., he worked 12 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week as a foreman. In his spare time, he coached baseball for the boys' club and he organized community sports. Everybody liked him. He was really a well-respected member of the community. He insisted that every morning the family eat breakfast together and every night they have dinner as a family. And he expected his children to do household chores before school and after school. And he taught his children the difference between right and wrong. During the summer, he made his kids work in the fields picking figs to teach them responsibility. I really like John Sr. We need, you know, more badass parents like that.
Absolutely.
Johnny was a pitcher on a baseball team coached by his father, and Johnny never got in any trouble. As a child, When he was 15, he was attacked by an older boy who bit his ear off.
Oh, no.
His father intervened and saved him from getting even more of the shit kicked out of him. But then tragedy struck the Avila family. They were at a wedding reception, and a man punched Johnny's sister in the mouth. When Johnny's father heard the news, he went to the parking lot and he confronted the man who was sitting in a car there. And he said, you know, you're not going to do this to my daughter. And I don't know what else he said, but he was really upset. Someone from inside that car shot him.
Oh.
He fell back into Johnny's arms and he died on the spot.
Oh, that's really sad. That's terrible.
That's when Johnny's life turned dark and he joined a gang. He knew Arlene. He had dated her cousin for a while a few years earlier, but that didn't stop him from okaying her death. Both Dorothy and Arlene were placed in the backseat of a 1990 gray Pontiac Bonneville. They were forced to kneel, and they had to put their heads face down against the seat cushions. Michael Rodriguez, who had said, hey, these are your homegirls, you know, you can't do that to your homegirls, they pushed him into the front seat, and they decided to make sure he didn't snitch, he was going to have to be one of the people that pulled the trigger. They thought if he had blood on his hands, it would silence him. As the five drove off, another gang member followed closely behind in a blue Datsun. They arrived at dusk to the edge of the canal, and they parked the cars along the side of the road. The fields of crops that surrounded the area would provide them ample notice for any cars coming. And the countryside roads, they were barren at this time. But eventually the world would wake up, so they needed to complete the deed pretty quickly. A man I have not mentioned yet, his name was Jeffrey Spraudlin, and I think he was 19. He grabbed Dorothy from the back seat, and he marched her to the bank of the canal. Michael Rodriguez was ordered to join him. He had a gun. He was going to be the one to off Dorothy. Dorothy was forced to kneel on the dirt. Jeffrey Spraudlin grabbed her by the back of the neck, and she just pleaded with him to spare her life, just to show her some mercy, promising, I won't say anything to anyone. This completely and utterly freaked Michael Rodriguez out. He dropped his gun, and he took off running back to the Bonneville, and he said, I'm not killing her. Spraudlin held the gun to the back of Dorothy's head, and he shot her at point-blank range. She fell over, and he shot her again. Now, Arlene, she's still in that car.
Oh, shit.
She had to know her death was imminent. She had to.
She had to.
Johnny marched her to the canal's embankment.
I mean, she didn't even see anything, really. I mean, she did, but most of the night, she didn't even know what was going on.
I know, but...
Yeah.
She's a witness still.
True.
Johnny marched her to the canal's embankment. And of course, she begged for her life. He fired a shot at her, but the gun jammed. Arlene saw her chance to escape, and she took off running. She made it 10 feet into a row of grapevines that lined the canal before Johnny shot her with a gun. She was wounded, but she wasn't dead, and she tried to crawl away.
Aww.
But it was futile.
Right.
He just rolled up on her, and he fired a second bullet into her head. When they were done, the men took the stolen Bonneville to a car wash. They cleaned the outside of it for any evidence. And then they returned just
seriously
by where the bodies were and lit it on fire. I guess they thought maybe they would burn up. I don't know. 40 minutes later, the four men returned to the wilderness compound in that rusted old blue Datsun without the girls. The first thing Johnny said to the remaining group was how upset he was that Arlene's blood had splashed on his clothes and his brand new shoes that his mother recently bought him.
Really? What an asshole.
He yelled out to Richard, I took care of your fucking business, so you better take care of stuff, quote unquote, if anybody was to squeal. And then he looked at Michael Rodriguez. He grabbed a gun, he pointed it at Michael, and he said, I should just kill you right now. He started calling him a rookie. Richard got between the two and assured Johnny that he would personally blow the head off of any snitches. And I just want to point out that Michael Rodriguez did defend himself. He said, listen, I didn't want to go there in the first place.
Mm-hmm. You made me go.
You made me go. Once Johnny calmed down, he bragged to the group, quote, "You should have seen how the girls' heads cracked."
Oh, no.
Richard was really pissed off when he learned that Arlene and Dorothy's bodies had just been left out in the open. He was like, hello, there's a canal. Why didn't you put the bodies in the canal? It would have given us at least a few days before they would be discovered. Johnny offered to go back to the canal and put the bodies in, but Richard was just done with the whole thing, and he said, let's just let things be. While these discussions were going on, Ray Juarez and some other lingering gang men, they were inside the Wilderness RV, and they were listening to the police scanner.
Oh, shit.
And they heard that two female bodies had been found near the canal. This happened right away.
Right.
Ray told everybody what he heard. And then you know what that asshole did?
What?
He fell asleep. And he slept till noon.
What?
He was tired.
Well, of course. He'd been up all night.
That's how much he cared about their bodies being found and what happened to his ex-girlfriend. Richard disposed of the 9mm Tech-9 and a 25 caliber semi-automatic pistol that was used to kill the girls. He dismantled it, and then he used a blowtorch.
Huh.
I didn't know you could do that. He destroyed it with a blowtorch. When Spring saw on the news the murder of Arlene and Dorothy, and it was big news right away.
Right.
It was on the 8 o'clock morning news. She knew she had to come forward.
Oh, that poor kid.
She hadn't known most of the men who attacked her. I mean, she was just friends with Zeke. But bravely, she ended up testifying against them, offering every detail she remembered of that wicked and vile night from hell for her. The first person that was arrested was Ray Juarez. You're not going to be happy with the ending of this.
Fuck, are you kidding me?
You are so not going to be happy. In the end, out of all those people that were at that party and knew what was going on and raped the girls and gave them drugs and all that, there were only a few that ended up getting in any trouble. In 1994, a Fresno County jury convicted Johnny Avila Jr., Richard Avila, and also Jeffrey Spraudlin of two counts of first-degree murder. As far as I know, I don't know anything that happened with the men that raped Spring. I know that most of the men ended up testifying in exchange for leniency. I looked up every single man's name in the court records that I could find involved with this case to see their current situation. And none of them are in prison. I couldn't see any of them in the system as having done time. Though I'm quite sure they didn't go on to be outstanding citizens. Johnny Avila was sentenced to death. He died on San Quentin's death row at the age of 62 of COVID. So wow. COVID can do some good. I'm just saying.
Wow, that was recent.
First time I've heard of something positive with COVID. Richard Avila and Jeffrey Spraudlin received sentences of life without the possibility of parole. Richard is 57 and he is housed in Mule Creek State Prison. Jeffrey Spraudlin is 49 and he's, I don't know, doing time somewhere in California. Now, do you remember I was telling you about Zeke and Robert? They were both 15 at the time. By June of 1996, they were members of the Parkside Fresno Bulldog Gang. But the two former best friends had a falling out because Zeke fucked Robert's girlfriend.
Oh.
In retaliation, Robert shot and killed Zeke.
He did.
They were both only 20 at the time.
That's really sad.
The Wilderness compound no longer stands, and it has been replaced by vineyards growing grape for wine.
Damn, Talia.
That's the end of the Parkside Fresno Bulldog Gang.
Just so sad.
It is really sad. Gangs scare the fuck out of me.
I know. It's just so, like, meaningless. Like, did it just because?
Just because.
Wanted something to do. What the hell?
And as far as the drive-by, it did actually happen.
It did?
I just felt like it's so meaningless compared to the rest of the story.
Did anybody get killed?
No one got killed. There were just some firing. And then they took off.
See, that's stupid, too.
The whole thing is stupid.
Yes, it's just sad.
And I really hope that the Fresno State University changed their
logo.
I don't know why they kept it up 10 years.
I don't either.
Can you imagine you're going there to college and you're wearing the same clothes that the fucking gang members are wearing?
I know.
What?
Like crazy.
Why don't you start barking though? You've crossed to the other side.
Well, thank you, Talia.
I want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen. If you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe or follow button on whatever app you're listening to us on. In addition, if you want early releases or ad-free releases and exclusive episodes, over 170 you can get right now immediately if you either A, subscribe to our Apple podcast channel, or B, go to patreon.com/TNTCrimes and subscribe there. You can find out more information if you want by going to our website, crimesandconsequences.com. We would love for you to follow us on our social media. We have Facebook and Instagram. The handle is Hardcore True Crime.
Hardcore True Crime.
Hardcore True Crime. Anything else?
No, I think that's everything.
Well, thank you, Tanya, for listening to that.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
They're all tough ones.
You're right, they are.
We have much tougher ones coming, which is horrible to say, but this makes me really sad. I hate to see such extreme sexual violence on young women.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. So, well, thank you, everyone. Until our next episode.
Don't kill each other.
Bye.
Bye.